create trust online, right? Mm. To have a respondent feel that they're in a safe space where they can trust that their information is confidential, where they can trust that person on the other end, the company on the other end is listening hard, and so on and so forth. And I think that trust thing can be broken, but it's very hard to build. And it's way easier to build if you just say, okay, everybody, so here's who we are. Here's what we're trying to learn. Here's what we want to know this week.
This is Real Talk, the Customer Insights Show with Jen Vogel, a top-rated live stream and podcast in the market research and insights industry. We stream live on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, and you can listen on all major podcast channels. Join Jen and her guests for a weekly discussion around topics that will help you understand your customers better. Real Talk is presented to you by Vox PopMe, the leader in video research and ranked number one in qualitative research by Grit 2 years running. Here's today's conversation.
Hello, insights professionals, marketers, and everyone who wants to understand their customers better. I'm your host, Jen Vogel. Research communities can have advantages for brands trying to understand their customers better. To discuss that topic, I'm so excited to be joined by Diane Hessen, an award-winning entrepreneur, innovator, and founder of Communispace, now C-Space, which was the first company to create online communities for market research way back in the year 2000. Welcome to the show, Diane.
My pleasure.
So to get us started, will you tell us a little bit about how you got started building communities? Like, what opportunity did you see in the space, in the industry, that made you think this is kind of the next, the future of insights?
Well, you know, I didn't do a big market study of the research industry. What we were really looking at was, you know, if you think about the year 2000, it was really the beginning of the internet, and the pundits were basically talking about the three C's: content, commerce, and community. Like, what is this internet thing? And the three C's were commerce, that people would use the internet to buy things. Content, all the content that you wanted in the world would be on the web. Like, you would never need an encyclopedia anymore, because if you had a question, you could actually look it up, and that pretty much turned out to be true. The commerce thing, people would talk bricks and clicks, that no one would ever buy anything in a store anymore. And of course, that kind of turned out 50% to be true. And then of course, the third C was community. And community meant that people would use this internet thing to actually interact with and have conversations with each other. And if you are anywhere between the ages of probably 30 and 110. One of the cool things is that we all have the exact same first experience with community, which is that we had an AOL account, an America Online account, and you would go online and you could go into a place called Tennis Lovers and you could talk with other people who really like tennis. Or I remember playing games with, I remember playing backgammon with somebody who was in India. I mean, it was just unbelievable. And I personally just became completely enthralled with this notion of community and conversation and how people could actually collaborate and make things happen online. And that was the reason that we started Communispace. In the beginning, we were building software that would allow people to make connections with each other, but I wasn't sitting there going, you know, let's create a market research tool. It was just, how do we build something? You know, we had profiles of people's faces and, you know, how do we build something that allows people to enrich the conversations that they can have when they're not physically together? And we essentially stumbled upon our community idea. We were playing around with our software. We were largely a technology company at the time. And we had a client at Hallmark that was going to use our software to help people internally within Hallmark share ideas so that they could figure out how to improve the profitability of their Gold Crown stores, et cetera. And when I went out to Kansas City and met with Tom Brailsford, who was our client at the time, he looked at me at one point and just said, Diane, I love what you guys are doing. I think this technology is awesome, but I'm worried that this, basically this application that we have isn't going to work. And I think I have a better idea. And he had the idea that given how much change was going on in his industry at the time, that perhaps instead of having internal Hallmark people collaborate with each other, we might try inviting consumers into this community so that they could have conversations with Hallmark and with each other to give Hallmark kind of a continuous connection to customers. So that's really how it started. It was very serendipitous. I had always been interested in, I wrote a book about how you grow your company by focusing on your customers. So I was always very interested in customer focus and customer obsession and customer connection, but it wasn't really a market research application until honestly, we had a couple of early adopters. And when I took the Tom Brailsfords of the world on the road and went to an insights conference, let me just say that people were not happy. They thought that what we were doing was awful. So I started learning that we had tripped right into the insights space.
I love that. You were making some waves and you were like, okay, I think we're onto something here.
Oh yeah. But it was awful. I mean, people would say, this isn't market research. This is not statistically significant. And I'd literally be saying, I didn't say it was market research. I didn't say it was statistically significant. Or people would say, you can't, if you build a relationship, and we can talk a little bit about what communities are, but if you build a continuous relationship with customers, that's the exact opposite of what you want to do in research. Because at the time, the idea was that you would ask someone a question once, but if you built a relationship with them, that they would be biased, that they would tell you what you wanted to hear. And we started learning that if you build a continuous relationship with your customer, they're actually significantly more honest. And, you know, that was where the breakthrough started happening. But people thought it was a terrible research application in the beginning.
Oh my gosh. I love that. I think it's so interesting how you kind of, I mean, you were essentially building a sort of Facebook experience, mm-hmm. like a platform for people to communicate and interact. And like you said, serendipitously ended up building a maybe not a research community, a customer community mm-hmm. at the start. And I just love hearing how consumer-centric a brand like Hallmark was before it was cool to be consumer-centric, right? Like yeah. Now everybody's talking about that, but from, you know, 20 years ago, they're thinking about how are we bringing consumers in?
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm going to exaggerate to make the point here, but one of our other really early clients was Kraft. And we had a wonderful client named Gretchen Whateley. And I remember that in the early days, I mean, our software was mostly working and we were trying to figure out how you do this. I mean, how do you get 200, 300, 500 consumers online and engage them and get them to, you know, talk about their lives and their dreams and their frustrations. So we were really experimenting. And Gretchen said to me, Diane, I have to tell you, I think this could be big. I love what you guys are doing. And I said, well, tell me more. And she said, here's the thing. Last week, I was at a focus group. And it was a Kraft focus group. We have these great facilities. And we were sitting there eating our M&Ms, watching these women talk actually about calorie counting was a lot of what was going on in the focus group. It was diet, et cetera. And she said, we're sitting there and eating. And all of a sudden, one of my coworkers was like leaning on his chair and his arm went off and he hit the light switch and all of the lights went on. And the consumers who were at the table turn around and look at all of us. And she said, guess what we did? We hit the floor. She said, that's not a comment on the industry. I don't want to do that. She said, but that is a comment on where we are as a research team at Kraft in the year 2000, that we are working so hard to be scientific that when we have an opportunity to actually have our consumers see us, and for us to let them see us, we literally fall on the floor as if we're breaking some rules. And she said, you know, this is a new thing for us, that we're actually doing the opposite, that we're reaching out and we're saying, let's talk because we really, really want to understand you. And that's why I'm excited about it. I mean, we had lots of little things happen like that, that just, you know, gave me a lot of affirmation at the time that maybe we were onto something.
Yeah. Some like major shift, actually. Not just, this isn't just about technology, but actually enabling that two-way connection and interaction, which researchers weren't allowing themselves to participate in previously, which is fascinating.
Right.
And so you mentioned, like, you know, previously, like building a continuous relationship with a consumer, that's not research, you know, so let's define what a research community is. And, you know, how do you see it? How do you define a research community? And really, how does it work?
Yeah, so let's see here. I would say a research community is a digital space where people interact over time in three dimensions. So you're inviting people into this digital space, and there are three dimensions of conversation. Number one, the company can ask questions of all the consumers. That's one part of the triangle that we used to build. So company, consumer. Another thing that can happen is that the consumer can actually give unsolicited advice to the company. So company asking questions, and consumers, independent of whether there are any questions or not, saying, I have another thought. Can you listen to it? And then the third dimension of the community, the bottom of the triangle, is where you give the consumers or customers, if it's B2B, but you give the members of the community opportunity to actually have conversations with each other. And we built our software, I don't even think it was part of the spec, but when we launched our original communities, we'd start things and we were very, very focused on this part of the triangle, right? What are all the things that we want to ask consumers? And what we found as we started launching communities is that people, and you know, and you all know this. I mean, everybody knows this. We've all taken surveys saying, gee, I now answered 14 questions, but you forgot to ask me the following three things. You know, we always think when we're actually the respondent that we have ideas for how to improve things. So in a community, people could say, by the way, you just asked me that, but I have three other things that I want to say. And people would always say, by the way, do you mind if we talk to each other? And we would say, I don't know. Sure, talk to each other, knock yourself out. I mean, we literally learned that way by just having everything be organic. So a community is this digital space where people come together for a purpose and, you know, create a network enabled by a technology platform. And in market research, the purpose of the community is to give people an opportunity to have a voice in the future of the company that is sponsoring the community. So if you are Coca-Cola and you're trying to understand Gen Z, you could populate a community of Gen Z consumers who are specifically recruited to help Coca-Cola make decisions about how to serve them moving into the future. And as a result, the deal is that Coca-Cola is going to listen very hard and that the people who are members of that community will have a voice in the decisions that Coca-Cola makes as a result of that, which is a super cool thing to be able to do. I mean, we used to have community members, they would like put their participation in our community on their resume because
really?
They felt so important to what was going on. So that's kind of how it works. And when you're doing a research community, you are, especially on this dimension of what's going on, you can do all kinds of activities. You can survey the members of the community. You can ask them open-ended questions. You can, I mean, we have all kinds of technology, and I think most research community suppliers do these days. So you can do a heat map. You can help people do collages. You can ask them to post videos. I mean, I can go on and on, but there are all different kinds of both qualitative and quantitative methodologies that you can execute within a community on this dimension of let's ask questions of the 500 people who are the members of this on a continuous basis. But you have to do a really good job also of just pulling your data together and content coding and watching and observing, you know, what people are asking you about and what people are saying to each other.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's so much that you can learn from those interactions that consumers are having with each other. You know, those questions you didn't know you needed to ask about. But I think that's such a key differentiator, the second and third dimension of what you described between, you know, going out to panels for research or going out to, you know, whoever to get them to fill out your surveys. That's that one, that's only that first dimension, and you sort of miss all of the organic inbound comments or communication that's happening within the community, that where there's so much opportunity to learn. But to the last point of what you said, that like content coding and observation and really making sense out of what you're observing and what you're learning, that's the trickiest part, right? Like, what are some of the ways that you've seen people kind of tackle that well?
Yeah, I mean, look, there are so many ways to do this. We used to have a group that was just about doing things creatively, because there are a lot of, you know, one of the things that's interesting is we used to measure, and I keep saying used to because I'm not running the company anymore, so I don't have all of the numbers at my fingertips, but our average participation rate was 80%. So we had very, very high engagement. And one of the reasons that we had high engagement is that we got outrageously creative in terms of how we were asking people questions. So you can have a great community and you can have all three parts of this triangle, but if all you're doing is surveying people, it's boring, right? I mean, you don't want to be in a community and just keep getting bombarded by surveys. So we had a team that was really good at coming up with creative ways to get insight. So, I remember once for a cosmetics company, we had a bunch of consumers, of female consumers, and we asked them to take a picture of themselves when they woke up in the morning, when they left for work, in the middle of the day, when they got home from work, and when they went to bed, and then annotate it. And we created technology that allowed people to do that. But people could literally put together a diary of their day. We could see their journey of what they were doing and watch what was going on. And it was extraordinary what we saw there and what people wrote. So we'd have a team that tried to do things like that, because the amazing thing in a community is people will do that, right? People are not in there just to kind of take their 30 seconds and fill out a survey. They literally take the pictures and make comments. They would create videos. They would try out recipes. I mean, they're really, really dedicated here if you run the community well, because they think it's cool to be able to participate in the future of a company.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, some of the things you've described are very creative and out of the box and maybe not sort of traditional research. Like, what's the risk of not getting creative with that? Like, what happens when you don't maintain a community to that level and get them excited and engaged? I mean, you mentioned your response rates were high, or in the 80% or whatever, you know, what else?
Yeah, well, look, here's why response rates are high. It's not critical just to have response rates that are high, because we're thinking about it from a survey point of view. If you have a community of 500 people and you've got 450 people who are actively participating in the community, there's so much that you can do. And one of the things you can do is you can move really fast. I mean, if you have 80% of the people really engaged, you literally can be sitting in a board of directors meeting, have a board member ask a question, and have the CEO say, you know, I'm not sure what our customers would say about that, but let me find out. And literally within an hour, you can get responses from a couple hundred people. I mean, especially if you say to them, by the way, we have a big board meeting coming up. We have some really, really critical decisions to be made. Please check in tomorrow just in case we have questions. I mean, the community members would go crazy, but if you have that kind of engagement, you can have a massive amount of participation, and therefore we can deliver a lot of value to to our clients. So every single one of our communities, you know, when I was running the company, we'd have, 300, 400 communities operating at any one time. We had a dashboard and we knew what the participation rates were in every single community. And we had a research team that would look at where we had high engagement, where we had moderate or situations in which we had low engagement. And we'd look at best practices. And we had a research team that was constantly measuring that and helping all of the other teams figure out how to increase participation. Just because it's so valuable once you have something. And the measure that we use was called vibrancy.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah. A vibrant community. I love that so much. And just hearing you say like, oh, we were measuring best practices. You were creating best practices, really. Like, you know, there wasn't a playbook for you guys to build off of. So it's really, really impressive kind of what you set in motion for the industry. And hearing you say like, oh, just that connection, like it's exactly what the purpose of the community is, that researchers at the time were saying, no, that's not real research. Like, don't build the relationships. But now we just live in an age of continuous discovery and co-creation with the people that you're serving, whether that's product or service or anything like that. And you were really creating that. I love that story of like, we've got a board meeting. Could you just like be in here in case we have questions for you?
Yeah. By the way, Jen, we were not cavalier about this. So we came into an industry, which, I mean, I love the research industry. And there are so many people who have built this industry that are some of my best friends in the world. So this is not me trying to put the industry down. I think this was one of the things that we did very early on that ended up being extremely critical is we had... Like the first thing I did is I thought, oh my gosh, I'm in the research business. I need to hire some people who are real market researchers. And so I hired two very experienced market researchers to come into the company and just help tear this thing apart. And I remember one of the things they said to me is, Diane, let me tell you the 15 things you should not do with a community. So you shouldn't make a major decision. You can't do a market segmentation. I mean, we do that. And I had a slide in all of our sales presentations, which basically said, now that you know how excited we are about all the benefits you can get from a community, here are all of the things that you would not do that are just not legitimate with this kind of methodology and this kind of technology. And it was interesting. Clients really loved that slide. I mean, they really relaxed. So to them, we were being authentic. From our point of view, we were just trying to be responsible. And we eventually created an internal research team that was constantly, it was three people, and all they did 24 hours a day, it was their job. All they did was to look at, you know, anything that we thought was going on, they'd go and make sure it was true. So for instance, when I say people actually were more candid with us in a community than, you know, having a what we call a persistent relationship than they were if they were just kind of doing a quick project. We actually had our research team go and look at situations in which we could uncover that people were being incredibly honest or where they might be biased. We literally identified when people were more biased and knew what kinds of questions we shouldn't ask. So for instance, the area where community members were more biased than a normal respondent was when we asked people, it was about the elasticity of the brand. So if you would say, we're Colgate-Palmolive and we have all this oral care stuff, but we're thinking about getting into, flowers. That's pretty extreme. But we're thinking about getting into, eye care. Let's say they're getting into eye care. In the community, the members were more biased, meaning they were significantly more likely to say, that is a great idea. Whereas with other methodologies, eye care, probably not a good idea, probably doesn't fit with the brand. But the members were so excited about Colgate, it was kind of like, I think you guys can do anything. I mean, if anybody can get into the eye care business from the dental care business, you can. So in that kind of project, our research team uncovered that we need to be careful and we need to tell the clients to be careful. Or one of the things clients used to say to us was, how come you don't do a 1,000-person community, a 2,000-person, a 1,000,000-person community? How do we scale this? And one of the things that we found, and we had unbelievable amounts of data on this, is that if the community were smaller, it actually increased participation. So our research team was constantly looking at what's the ideal community size to maximize the number of responses. So if you have 100,000 people participating, if you run a 500-person community well, you actually can get more responses from the 500-person community than you do from the 100,000-person community. And all of our geeky researchers were constantly doing work like that. And it mattered enormously because clients were always asking these questions. And, you know, we felt like it was an integrity thing for us to be able to really measure and, you know, confirm or deny the hypotheses that we had.
That's such a great tip, honestly, for any technology platform out there that's entering the market research space from outside. I mean, that's been a criticism I've seen for years in the industry with any platform that comes into the industry. The initial response from the industry is, you guys don't know, you don't understand research, right? So like making sure you have a team of researchers there who's validating the work you're doing and providing the data, building trust, saying, hey, here's an application where you wouldn't want to use us. You know, I think that's really important. That's such a great tip. I'm curious about, you know, talking about the sort of biased community, like, oh, if anybody could do it, Colgate can, like, I love that. How do you think about, you know, maybe some of those white labeled or unbranded communities that can be built that aren't necessarily like, don't have a brand logo sponsoring them, at least from the consumer perspective? What are some of the pros and cons of doing that?
You know, we tried that. We tried it sometimes because clients didn't want to reveal who they were. Or we'd try, you know, I mean, we'd build a community of millennials and make that community available to multiple clients and everything. So we tried variations of all of that. They work. It's just that participation is significantly lower when you have a white label community than if you have a branded community for all of the obvious reasons. I mean, people love understanding who is on the other side, actually listening to what they're saying. And, you know, people also want to understand the impact of what they've recommended. So, hi, everybody. That was really helpful. You know, that ad you said that you didn't like last week? Well, we were about to go with that, but, you know, we've decided not to based on the feedback that we've gotten from you. I mean, those sorts of things are extraordinary experiences for consumers. It increases the chances that they're going to be honest with you. It increases their likelihood of participating, et cetera. And you can't do that in a white label community because people don't want to know who the brand is. So those are all possible. It's just that branded ended up being better, faster, and significantly less expensive, you know, less money per insight. than what you'd get from a white label community. So I was never a big fan of those. We did have clients who wanted them and we, you know, we'd oblige, but we, you know, we'd set some expectations up front.
That makes a lot of sense. And really it's a trade-off, right? Just like anything, like, you know, you trade off the bit of bias and just acknowledge, okay, don't ask them this sort of thing because they're going to be a little bit more brand loyal or more excited about ideas. So stay away from this topic. We're going to get a lot of participation on these other things. So it's worth that trade off. And you can always get that unbiased sort of third party, maybe non-customer opinion from other means. There are other panels out there you can tap into and other ways you can survey those groups that maybe aren't your own community.
Yeah. I mean, look, what are we looking for from respondents? We want people, you know, in an ideal situation, people are as candid as possible. And they're also responding to you as quickly as possible, but they're really kind of opening up to you in ways that they haven't been able to do before. That was the goal. So how do you do that? The only way you do that is to create trust online, right? Mm. To have a respondent feel that they're in a safe space where they can trust that their information is confidential, where they can trust that person on the other end, the company on the other end is listening hard, and so on and so forth. And I think that trust thing can be broken, but it's very hard to build. And it's way easier to build if you just say, okay, everybody, so here's who we are. Here's what we're trying to learn. Here's what we want to know this week. Here's what you said that shifted everything about what we thought. Here's what you said that you didn't agree with, and we've decided to do it anyway, and we agonized over it, and here's why we decided to move forward. I mean, all of those sorts of things are ways that you increase the chances that you're going to get real magic and ultimately real insight in your responses. But figuring that out and how you facilitate that is just, you know, it's an ongoing journey. You know, it's funny. I parlayed a lot of what I learned from industry into the political arena over the past 5 years. And so I basically built an online community of American voters, all points of the political spectrum, every age, every ethnicity. And since 2016, I basically spent 5 years online trying to understand what was going on in people's minds, why they voted the way they did, et cetera. I'll tell you, that is fascinating because think about political research. People do not tell the truth to pollsters. Mm. And we could do a whole other podcast on that. But everything about what I was trying to do with these voters was to get them to tell me what they really thought mattered, what was really going to happen when they got into the voting booth, what they really worried about when they were lying in bed at night, what their families really talked about around the kitchen table, and what the implications of that were for policy in our country and everything else. And I wrote a book about it called Our Common Ground at the end of last year. But what did I do in the beginning? I interviewed for a half hour every single member of the community. And the reason I did it is I wanted them to know, not only, I didn't want them to just see my picture and my name. I literally wanted them to hear my voice. I wanted them to be clear that there was somebody else on the other end who just wanted to learn, that I was not going to sell their information to the to a candidate who they didn't like, that I was not going to judge them, and that I was just outrageously curious about what was going on. And then, of course, you don't get that trust right away. But over the years, people shared with me just, you know, extraordinary stuff about what was going on. So I think in just that way, in any situation, just building trust with a respondent online, you know, is just hugely important and delivers benefits again and again.
Yeah. And I think as there's this, internet transformation through the 2000s and really so much communication happens online and with no face, mm-hmm. you know, it's not the days where you used to get a phone call from somebody who wanted to interview you. Like mm-hmm. you said, hear my voice. Like I'm a real human that's, you know, just looking for your opinion or whatever the case may be. So I love that. I love that the community sort of gives you a platform to build that trust and that two-way communication or really three-dimensional communication, as you mentioned, is key there. Yeah. For brands, are there any like specific scenarios or, you know, kind of situations where it might trigger, hey, this would be a good time to build a community. Here's a good reason why, you know, here's a turning point where we need to invest in something like this. Or is it just sort of like a, hey, it's always a good idea to have this place?
Yeah. Well, You know, it kind of depends on the community structure. I mean, look, I'm completely biased. I mean, I've seen such extraordinary things come out of our communities. I've got so many stories of companies that have just implemented unbelievable transformation as a result of what they learned from their consumers in their community. So I think everybody should have one. Now, everybody from a certain size. So if you are a company that's like at a minimum 500 million in sales and bigger, these companies should just have 1, 3, 5, 10 communities going on all the time. Because, you know, this is about hardwiring the voice of the customer into the company. This is about kind of converting your customers and their voices into an asset that the company has on a continuous basis. So it's great to be able to do that. And relative to a lot of other things that marketing spends money on, I'll tell you, Jen, I remember this is probably, I don't know, 2006, 2007, 8. I remember watching the Super Bowl and looking at, there were just a bunch of terrible ads in that particular year. And I looked at it and I thought, oh my gosh, these ads are awful. And look how much money they're costing. And I went to Twitter. All right. So that was probably 2008, 2009. I went to Twitter and I said, for one lousy 30-second Super Bowl TV spot, you could talk to 10,000 consumers all over the world for a year, you know, for the cost of that one TV spot. And to this day, that's the most tweeted, that's the most retweeted tweet I have. I mean, people really believed it. So, you know, from a research point of view, like building that asset, it's not even that expensive to do it and to do it well. If you compare it to, you know, what a brand spends, you know, on advertising sometimes in just a 30-second spot. So I do think that it's the kind of thing that's really important for people. I think, you know, is there a time just to answer your question, not to avoid what you're asking me? I guess if you've just done a segmentation and you've got one segment or you've got a couple of personas or whatever that you think are really, really important, it's a great time to build a community after you've done a segmentation. So you go, okay, we have this persona and her name is Emily and we're going to do a community of Emily's, or we're going to do a community of all three. And then we'll, you know, segment the data as we do the analysis or whatever. I think doing that is great because ultimately when you're building a community, you, one of the critical questions that you're asking is, who do we want in here? And sometimes it's target consumers, you know, that are critical segments. Sometimes maybe you want people who don't use you, but that would be a strategic question. And we would work that through with the client up front. But certainly after, you know, a new market segmentation, it's an absolutely splendid time to do this.
That's a great idea. Something, you know, as you were talking about sort of these larger organizations, you should just have like 5 or 10 of these like going at all times. I love how you described it as like hardwiring the voice of the consumer into the business. I guess like how, when you talk about the cost of something like this, as compared to like a Super Bowl spot for 30 seconds, like, yeah, it seems very inexpensive, but oftentimes I see these get siloed in the insights team where budgets are so limited. Like, how do you break out of this just getting stuck in insights and actually being hardwired throughout the organization end to end?
Well, look, you need champions. I mean, you need people who are high level, who this is not difficult to understand. I mean, when I tell you that we had Kraft as a client, I went to Kraft. I had a referral. A friend of mine actually knew Irene Rosenfeld, who was the CEO of Kraft. I went in to meet with her. I was super excited and super nervous. And the interesting thing about Irene Rosenfeld is that she was the only CEO at the time in the Fortune 500 who was a market researcher. So I sat down and I did a little demo and I showed her what we were doing and she got so excited. And she said to me, I know exactly who needs to see this? And she called someone who was a senior executive, but this is not difficult for executives to understand. So I do think that you need champions. Number two, we need to deliver results in ways that capture people's imaginations and that don't kind of sound like market research. So very often you do all this creative work and then your report is a Word document with a lot of statistics on it that's just really hard to get through. So, you know, I hired a bunch of people from an ad agency and said, how do we create gorgeous reports that look like the kind of thing that a CMO is going to carry around all the time, you know, kind of clasping at it. I mean, I think how we build champions, how we basically deliver results in a way that sounds strategic and that capture people's imaginations matters a lot. And then the other thing is that if the community is vibrant and you're using it on a continuous basis, you can actually pay for it. I mean, if it's the cost for us, what it used to be was the cost of two focus groups per month. And if you did more than that, because you're a large corporation, certainly people do a lot more than that, you know, in terms of focus groups, you know, people could pretty much get a payback from it right away. You know, I think the key thing there is what you don't want to do with a community is like waste people's time. So I always used to say, let's do some things that are really going to lead to breakthroughs or that will really make a senior executive look at us and say, oh my gosh, I had no idea. You know, that's what we wanted. So to use a community to say, do you like the green package or the blue package? You know, to use a community to say, do you want to pay $1.99 or $2.19? I mean, that's fine. Sometimes you can do that and you can move really fast. But I think a lot of this is about understanding the dynamics of a community enough to be able to demonstrate that this is, I mean, I used to, you know, people would ask me for prices and I'd say, you know, at the time, you're not going to believe this, but it's only $20,000 a month. And here's what you get for that community. And it was, to me, it was just such a no-brainer. And to our clients who loved what they were doing and who would sign up year after year after year after year, because that was our other big metric, which was just, you know, renewal rate, you know, I think they felt the same way.
Yeah, that's such a great, like, don't ask questions that you can get answers easily elsewhere, like really capitalize on the value of having that captive audience, that trusting audience in front of you. And I think what you said too about the cost of focus groups and the cost of other methodologies, like, I think now it's a time when a lot of businesses are thinking about how are we cost cutting? How are we kind of consolidating costs maybe? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of the reason why community had such a big boom back in the 2008 to 2010 sort of era is like the economic impact on businesses was requiring people to consolidate a bit. And there's mm-hmm. so much you can do within a community, maybe it feels like a big lift at the start, at the build stage, but consolidating budget and activity and effort, resource from other areas that you're spending that resource can be really valuable, especially now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the trick there is, I mean, look, people don't have to work with C-Space, which is the name of the company now. I mean, you know, I think there are a lot of companies that are in the space now, but don't work with a company that hasn't done this a lot, because there is secret sauce to how you do this. I mean, the more you do this, the better you get at it. And there is secret sauce to how you set this up and who you invite in and what you say to them and how you launch things and how you respond, you know, when people give you answers and what you do when somebody has a problem. I mean, there is so much best practice in there. And I think that, you know, with firms that have done this again and again and again, I mean, you know, you just get better at it all the time. And I don't think that communities can replace everything. I mean, I'm actually a big fan of focus groups. And I'm lucky. I'm on the board of Schlesinger, and Schlesinger does, you know, has an enormous focus group business, and I have watched those. And it's the same thing, the sophistication of what's happening in those focus groups and when you would use them and when you need people to actually touch and feel and taste and experiment with something. You can also do that with communities, but it's different from actually seeing the whites of their eyes. So really, you know, jumping in, trying everything out and getting really good at saying, ah, that particular methodology is good for answering those sorts of questions, you know, is part of the trick.
Yeah, totally. And that takes a lot of, like you said, experience. You've got to, you know, you've got to do it to know this is the best methodology for this objective because X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So now I am grateful for everyone who didn't take my advice just now. So we would not have been able to do what we did in 2000, 2001, 2002 without clients like Hallmark and Kraft and Charles Schwab and Colgate and others who literally didn't take my advice. They didn't say how many times, actually they did say how many times have you done this? And I'd say two, you know, or one or whatever else. You know, you do want to look, well, as we all look at new technologies in the research space, sometimes it's just really fun to be first. It's fun to be an early adopter and experiment and go on a journey with a firm to try to figure out whether there actually is something important in what they're building. And we all don't have a lot of time for that. But I think doing that and having that be a piece of how you spend your time as a researcher is an extraordinary learning experience. So I am all for that. And we would never have been able to do what we did without people who were kind of willing to take a chance on us when I couldn't say, you know, we've done 2,000 communities.
Right. Totally. I love that. That's such great advice. And there's so much good collaboration and co-creation happening in the market. And, you know, I love that. Like, partner with your vendors, your tech platforms. Oh my gosh. Sorry. Got the wild here. yeah. To really create that future of, what's available for the industry. So I know we're really grateful for our client partners that help do the same with us. Like, hey, this is great, but if you could do this, it would be even better. Right. And you know, that blend of our expertise and what we think is going to be the best for our customers and our customers telling us what they need. Like, you can't do just one or the other, but that blend of the two together is real magic.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's tempting because you're in the video space. It's so tempting to just say video is the greatest, right? You know, just think of the possibilities and everything. And it's such a compelling notion to really leverage the power of video to help organizations get insights. But that doesn't mean that you don't want to take responsibility to make sure that your clients are doing it right, you know, and to answer your questions. I remember once a client said to me, you know, Diane, if you mess this up, you're fine. You'll go off and, you know, go work with your other clients. But if you mess this up, it's my job or it's my reputation or whatever. And I think we need to take that really seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Well, I think that's a great place to leave it. This
somebody's giving you.
I just got the hook. It's time to go.
It's better to have a dog than a baby crying. Look at that dog.
Our most
vibrant communities, when it's so funny that happens. The most vibrant community we ever had, we had almost 100% participation. And it was a community for PetSmart. It was a pet lovers community. And those people, they didn't even want to hear from us. They were like online talking with each other all the time. And we learned a tremendous amount there. And literally, there were times when people would say, I asked my dog about this question, and here is what he said. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, that's a great place to leave it. I'm going to go ask my dog what he thought about this episode, but thank you so much for spending this time with us today. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Jen.
Thanks everyone for joining us and listening in. We're going to take a quick break between now and Thanksgiving, and we'll see you again after the holiday. Don't forget, you can listen to all 102 episodes wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you.